You're standing in your kitchen at 6 in the morning on a Saturday, coffee in hand, looking at the weather on your phone, and something in your gut says, I don't know about this one, but your friends are already at the lake house. You told them you'd fly in. You've been looking forward to this trip all month. I'm Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern on Radio Hangar. Today I want to walk you through a flight that never happened, a fictional Saturday morning. But every detail in it comes from real accidents, real National Transportation Safety Board reports, real mistakes that real pilots made. And I want you to be honest with yourself as we go through it, because the decisions I'm about to describe, they're going to sound completely reasonable. That's what makes them dangerous. Before we get into it, quick shout out to our friends at AviationSoul.com. If you're working through your training right now, they make beautiful challenge coins for every certificate and rating. Solo, private, instrument, commercial. It's a great way to mark the milestones. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. All right, let's set the scene. You're a private pilot. You've got about 180 hours total time. You finished your private certificate about a year ago, and you've been flying pretty regularly. You rent a Cessna 172 from your local flight school. You're planning a flight from your home airport in Central Virginia to a small grass strip in the mountains of West Virginia where your college buddy has a cabin. It's about 130 nautical miles you've done this flight twice before, both times in perfect weather. Here's where it starts. You checked the weather last night. The terminal aerodrome forecast for your departure airport showed visual flight rules all morning. But the area forecast mentioned a chance of instrument flight rules conditions in the mountains afternoon, with ceilings dropping to broken at 2,000 and visibility 3 to 5 miles in mist. Your destination doesn't have a terminal aerodrome forecast because it's a tiny uncontrolled field. The closest reporting station is about 25 miles east of the strip. So what do you do with that information? Most pilots in this situation say, I'll leave early and beat the weather. And right there, decision number one has been made. You've just anchored your entire plan to a timeline. You're not asking, is this a good day to fly this route? You're asking, can I get there before it gets bad? Those are two very different questions. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. The question is never can I make it. The question is what happens if I can't? If your plan depends on everything going right, it's not a plan, it's a hope. But okay, you decide to leave early. You set your alarm for 5:30. You get to the airport at 6:45, and here comes decision number two. You pull up the weather again. The current ATIS at your departure field shows clear skies, 10 miles visibility, wind calm, beautiful, but you notice the observation from that station 25 miles east of your destination. Ceiling is broken at 3,500. Visibility 6 miles in haze. Not bad, but it's 6:45 in the morning, and those ceilings are already lower than forecast. Now, a careful pilot looks at that and says, the trend is not my friend. If it's already 3,500 broken at sunrise, what's it going to be in 2 hours when the valleys start filling in with moisture? A pilot who is already committed to going says, 3,500 broken is totally fine. That's visual flight rules. I'll be there in an hour and 15 minutes. Both of those statements are factually true. 3,500 broken is visual flight rules. You probably will be there in an hour and 15 minutes. But one of those pilots is evaluating risk, and the other is confirming a decision they already made. That's confirmation bias. And it is the silent killer in general aviation. The Airman Certification Standards for the Private Pilot Certificate specifically test your ability to identify hazardous attitudes, and we all know the list. Anti-authority, impulsivity, invulnerability, macho resignation. But there's one they don't list that I think is the most dangerous of all. Reasonableness. The ability to make every bad decision sound perfectly logical. Let's keep going. You pre-flight the airplane, everything's good. You taxi out, take off, and head west. The first 30 minutes are gorgeous. Smooth air, clear skies, the Blue Ridge is out in front of you looking postcard perfect. You're at 5,500 feet and life is good. Then around 40 miles out, you notice the horizon ahead is getting hazy. Not dramatic, just you can't see as far as you could. You check the weather again. That station near your destination is now reporting broken at 2,800. Visibility 4 miles in mist. Decision number three. And this is the big one. You're 40 miles out. You're 40 minutes into a flight you've done before. Your friends are expecting you. The weather is technically still visual flight rules. 2,800 broken, 4 miles visibility. You can legally fly in that, right? Let's walk through this together. Can you legally continue? Let's think about it. You need to maintain visual flight rules cloud clearances in controlled airspace. That's 500 feet below, 1,000 feet above, and 2,000 feet horizontal from clouds. If the ceiling is 2,800 feet and you're at 5,500, you're above the cloud layer. So you'd need to descend, okay, so you descend to 2,300 feet to stay 500 below a 2,800 foot ceiling. But wait, you're heading into the mountains of West Virginia. What's the terrain elevation along your route? Some of those ridges are at 3,000 feet. You can't fly at 2,300 feet and clear the terrain. So now you're in a box. The ceiling is too low to go over the mountains, and the terrain is too high to go under the clouds, and you're 40 miles from your destination, which is a grass strip in a valley that you can only get into visually. This is the moment. This is where the accident chain either breaks or it doesn't. A pilot who breaks the chain says, "I'm turning around. I've got good weather behind me. I've got fuel. I'll go back, land, and drive. Or maybe I'll divert to an airport in the valley to the south where the weather is better. Maybe I'll just hold here for a bit and see if conditions improve, and if they don't, I'll go home." That pilot has options because they recognize the situation early. A pilot who doesn't break the chain says something like, "I think I can pick my way through the valleys. I know this area. I'll stay low and follow the highway through the gap. I've seen the terrain. I can do this." That's scud running, and scud running kills pilots every single year. The National Transportation Safety Board has investigated hundreds of accidents where a visual flight rules pilot continued into instrument conditions. It is one of the most common causes of fatal general aviation accidents. Not because the pilots were incompetent, because they were reasonable. Every step of the way, they made a decision that seemed okay in the moment. Let me give you the numbers. According to Federal Aviation Administration data, continued visual flight rules into instrument meteorological conditions accounts for roughly 4% of general aviation accidents, but it accounts for almost 20% of fatal accidents. That gap should terrify you. It means that when this goes wrong, it goes catastrophically wrong. You don't bend the landing gear, you hit a mountain. So let's talk about what the right decision-making framework looks like, because it's not enough to say don't fly into bad weather. You need a system for making go-no-go decisions before the pressure builds. First, set personal minimums before you leave the house. Not at the airport, not in the airplane before. For a pilot with 180 hours, flying into mountainous terrain to an unfamiliar grass strip, I'd want ceilings no lower than 4,000 feet along the route and visibility no less than 6 miles. Write those numbers down. Tell someone. When you say it out loud to another person, you're way more likely to honor it. Second, build in decision points along the route. Before you take off, pick 2 or 3 landmarks or waypoints where you will actively reassess. Not just glance at the sky, actually pull up the weather, check your position and ask yourself, is this still a good idea? The halfway point is an obvious one, but also pick a point about 20 miles before the terrain gets challenging. That's your last easy out. Third, identify your routes before you need them. Where will you divert? What airports are along your route that have instrument approaches in case you need to call approach control and ask for help? What's your fuel situation if you need to turn around? Do all of this planning on the ground, not at 2,300 feet in the haze, trying to read a sectional chart on your lap? Fourth, use the I'm safe checklist, honestly. And I mean honestly, did you sleep well? Are you stressed about work? Are you feeling pressured to make this trip because people are counting on you? That last one is the killer. External pressure, get theiritis. It's not on the checklist, but it should be in giant red letters at the top. And fifth, this is the one nobody wants to hear. Be willing to be the pilot who cancels. Be willing to be the one who says, "Not today." Your friends will understand. If they don't understand, they're not friends you should be flying to see. Nobody has ever died from being disappointed that a flight was canceled, but plenty of people have died because a pilot didn't want to disappoint someone. Let me bring this back to our scenario. Let's say you make the right call, you're 40 miles out, you see the weather deteriorating, and you turn around. You land back at your home airport, you drive to your buddy's cabin. It takes 3.5 hours, you get there, you crack a beer, and you tell the story about how you almost flew into the mountains in bad weather but decided not to. That's not a failure story, that's a success story. That's aeronautical decision-making, working exactly as it should. Now, let me tell you what the other version of this story looks like. I pulled this from an actual National Transportation Safety Board report. I've changed the details slightly, but the facts are real. A private pilot with about 200 hours attempted to fly through a mountain pass in deteriorating visibility. Ceilings were around 2,000 feet. The terrain in the pass rose to about 2,800. The pilot descended to stay below the clouds and entered a valley. The valley narrowed, the clouds lowered. The pilot attempted a 180-degree turn in the valley and struck terrain. The aircraft was destroyed. The pilot did not survive. The probable cause listed by the National Transportation Safety Board? The pilot's continued visual flight rules flight into instrument meteorological conditions, and the pilot's failure to obtain adequate weather information. But here's what struck me when I read the report. The pilot had obtained weather information. The pilot knew the weather was marginal. The pilot made a series of completely reasonable decisions that ended in a completely unreasonable outcome. That's the Saturday morning trap. It's not one bad decision. It's a chain of small compromises. Each one defended by logic, each one narrowing your options just a little bit more until you're in a valley with no ceiling, no visibility, and no options. So here's what I want you to take away from this. Next time you're standing in your kitchen on a Saturday morning looking at the weather and something in your gut says, "I don't know about this one," listen to that voice. That voice is the most honest flight instructor you'll ever have. The sources for today's segment come from National Transportation Safety Board accident reports and Federal Aviation Administration safety data on continued visual flight rules into instrument conditions. You can find links and more at radiohangar.com. I'm Pattern. Trust your gut, set your minimums, and I'll see you next time.